and welcome to my podcast. I shouldn't say this, but my name is Katie Leeson and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK. And it is my pleasure to welcome the fantastic Elizabeth Agarby, author of Side Hustle in Progress, onto the podcast today. Elizabeth has got such a fascinating background that I really wanted to tap into what made her start her side hustles and also understand a little bit about the benefits of doing a side hustle over the narrative that you sometimes get on social and the things that I've talked around about glamorizing overworking and reaching burnout. Elizabeth has got an incredible career history, and amongst so many other things, she's continuously advocated for women in business. This includes co-founding Liqueur.com, a private membership network that she's just started that's aimed at accelerating women into leadership roles, and founding Working Ladies, a digital media platform that focuses on equipping women with everything they need to start a successful business. In this episode, we discuss the realities of creating your own side hustle, the significance of long-term vision in setting boundaries, and the importance of a diverse leadership team. A massive congratulations on the book and the launch of the book.
Thank you.
Tell me a bit about it. What is it all about? What started it? All that stuff, your journey.
So it's called Side Hustle in Progress, a practical guide to kickstarting a business. And it's essentially a way to create an entrepreneurial venture as a side hustle. So alongside your full-time commitment. And I go into five parts. And the first part is called Before the Journey. And that's where I talk about stuff like mental health, the entrepreneurial mindset, how to actually generate ideas. And then the second part is called Branding Your Idea. And that's all about brand and marketing. So how to find customers, how to use your brand identity, storytelling. And then the third part is the important stuff. So the important stuff is things like legals, understanding tax, because it's actually really different when it's a side hustle. You might not need to be a limited company. It might just be that you remain self-employed, and that's really important to know so you're not being taxed incorrectly or paying more than you need to. And then the last part is life after side hustling, which is if you then desire to transition from your side hustle to make it full-time. So within all those parts, there are different chapters. But it's more from the perspective of how to start that business as a side hustle. So it's more about an entrepreneurial idea as opposed to kind of like a second job, like maybe stacking the shelves at a grocery store or something like that. It's basically an entrepreneurial idea. I got the inspiration from the book 2018. I had seen quite a few books come up that were guides, but they were more around freelancing, and then there were books also that were on particular parts of running a business, so like marketing, social media, validating your idea, but there was no real simple guide. And at the time, because I had started a platform called For Working Ladies, which was about getting women into business, a lot of the women that were coming into the events wanted to start a business, and there wasn't really a resource, one resource that I would say, okay, here, take this, read that, that goes through all the steps. So I just had the big idea, okay, I'm going to write a book. So I did the outline in Google Docs. That was 2018. And there was an editor that was really popular on Instagram. I just sent her an email and said, oh, I've started this platform and I'm thinking of writing a book. And she responded and said, oh, you've got a brilliant platform. I don't think it's strong enough yet, but maybe we can talk about the book later on. So I was a bit offended, I won't lie. I set the book outline aside and I was just like, you know what, the next time this comes up, the publisher is going to approach me. And I just kept writing it down at the beginning of every year that I'm going to write a book. But I just stopped. I stopped actively pursuing that particular book. And I was speaking about writing so many different books. And then mid-2020, HarperCollins had sent me an email about a book. And funny enough, I was actually writing another book at that time, but just by myself with a friend. So I had to put that on hold. That was the first time we actually just decided to take action and just start writing the book ourselves, even if we had to self-publish. So yeah, HarperCollins had sent me an email and said, oh, we'd love to discuss a book project. And it just happened to be the same as the one that I had outlined in Google Docs. Wow. So yeah, big coincidence. So it moved really, really fast as a result of that. So the chapters aligned with what they had in mind. And yeah, I looked for an agent because I didn't know all the little details, such as the contracts. I looked for an agent. And fortunately, I had some friends that were authors. And so they were just able to kind of give me some direction on how to go about the whole process. But I did find the writing process challenging, but fun, but definitely challenging. It was hard. I think I underplay how hard it was. Mm. It was definitely difficult because I've never written a book before. And it was during the pandemic as well. And we were working from home. So it was...
Wow.
Yeah, it was tough. It was literally from desk to bed to bathroom to maybe kitchen and then desk to bed. But yeah, luckily I live with my partner and my husband. So he was literally doing everything. I was just like a log. Honestly, I was literally like a log. If I didn't live with someone, I most probably wouldn't have eaten. Like I was just so into... I need to meet the deadline. And I did miss some deadlines, if I'm honest. Mm. But yeah, it was really hard.
You've always had it in you then to write a book, because you said you had a few ideas and then you were trying to write one with your friend. Do you think it's always been there? Has it always been an ambition?
Yeah, I think so. But I just never really thought about making it a reality. I think until I saw a few authors publishing, like a few authors that looked like me publishing. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of gave me the extra boost, like, okay, this is very possible. But yeah, it's definitely been there. I studied English Lit at A level and I did really crap. So I was just like, maybe this isn't for me.
So did I didn't read the book. Language. Yeah, I did. I was meant to read Wuthering Heights and I just never read it. So I got a U.
Oh my God. Well, I did a little better.
That's not a lesson for anybody listening. Don't do what I did.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do things like presenting, writing a book, things to do a lot around media. Mm. But again, I didn't really understand the career path into that. So I kind of followed the traditional career path, which was to study law. And then during the time I studied law, I was working as a PR exec for a small company. And then after that, I decided to do a master's in international business. So I really enjoyed business as a whole. I didn't know what part I wanted to go in. But during my master's, I realized that I really loved things around comms, marketing and strategy. So that kind of helped me change my career. And I didn't go into law, thank God. No offense to anyone who's a lawyer, but it just wasn't for me. But I definitely had the desire to do things around media, which is why I ended up starting a podcast. And I was writing a lot of interviews prior to starting the podcast. I was interviewing women who were founders or who had just grown their careers within organizations. And so I think writing the book really was another element of me wanting to kind of do something around media. Mm, storytelling to an extent.
Yeah, because you go through your education, but you don't really know that these jobs exist. And then you come out of your uni and it's like, oh, right, okay. And the amount of people that I've spoken to that work, even in social chain, they've fallen into it because it's kind of there at a point, but they didn't really plan to go into it. And it's fascinating.
It is, yeah. I wonder if I had known about it beforehand, if I would have maybe gone down a different career path from comms. But I mean, again, comms is, you know, it does have elements of storytelling and content and using different media outlets, especially when it's internal and external. So,
and I suppose it's all about engaging people in the right way as well, isn't it? And that's very similar, like knowing how to write something that's going to engage people and find the uses for it is similar to comms in that respect.
Yeah. I mean, it's more corporate and depending on the organization you're working for, it can be different. But yeah, it's quite similar, to be honest.
So your book is all around side hustles. What was your first side hustle?
It was a baking goods company with my friend, actually. We had, so in like just about a year after doing my master's, I had moved to Lagos, Nigeria to work for 5 years. And then one of my other friends had come. A lot of people who, like their parents were coming back because there were loads of opportunities. And so I was working at Unilever at the time. And so was she. It was such a coincidence because we also went to the same college. So she left to start her baking company, and she was really good. She just came up with loads of unique designs, and at the time there was a huge market for it. And so she needed someone who could focus on marketing and sales. So I was doing it alongside my full-time job at the time, and then it was going really fast. So then I went into it full-time with her, and she ended up opening a bakery actually. And then it was just growing. And then I went back into my full-time job. I went back into another full-time job, which was in comms, because I still enjoyed comms. But I really loved the idea of growing a business from the marketing and sales side. So I was really excited to come on board as her co-founder at the time. But that was the first side hustle. Sounds quite big for a side hustle.
It is big.
But it was, yeah. And that's what I talk about in the book, that, you know, something that you saw as a side hustle can actually outgrow from being a side hustle and actually become a full-time job. So if it's something that people desire, that's definitely the route to take, because not everyone has the option of leaving their full-time job and starting their business from scratch.
Or the confidence to do that either.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a massive control freak. So if I was going to do it, I'd have to like do it on the side until I knew that it was okay, and then I'd be fine. So amazing. Your first side hustle was a success, and then the book writing process was interesting. But I'm glad you finished it. I'm glad you managed to eat throughout that process as well. You've got a good husband there who kept you well fed then.
Yeah, he did, honestly. And there were times, because we were working from home, I was working in the living room and writing in the living room, and he's watching TV in there. At one point, he had to wear his headphones to watch TV because I was just like, I can't work with noise on. It was tough. It was tough, but it was good.
You've survived it, and now you've got the product. Like, you've done it, and you're now, it's amazing. I've got the massive respect for anyone who has the time to sit and write a book and put something out in the world. Like, it's tangible and it's amazing. I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
Being an author.
When you go through the process, you sometimes don't realize how much you've done because you've been in it for so long. You're working on the marketing afterwards. And I would just encourage anyone that works on anything big, really, to just find that moment to totally switch off, because it's only then that you really take it in. I think because I've been in it for so long, when I do meet someone that, oh, you've written a book, that's so amazing, how did you do it? I'm just like, it's just the book. It's like, no, it's not just the book, Liz, actually. Took you a couple of months and it was really tough. But I think it's because I was in the process for so long and I hadn't switched off. So yeah.
That's interesting. That's a great tip. Because, yeah, that book will sit on someone's... I'm looking at my bookshelf in front of someone's bookshelf. That book will sit, your work, your words, and it'll help people. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So the podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This, But... And before you came on, we asked you to come armed with an admission submission of your own. And it's because in every episode, I try and open up with honesty and talk about subjects that perhaps someone in my role as a managing director would usually avoid. So I've talked about things like anxiety, imposter syndrome, fear of failure. So please, would you mind sharing with us your admission of something you should probably not say, whether that's about struggles you faced during your career, a secret about your lockdown experience, or something that you're trying to overcome? So Elizabeth, I shouldn't say this, but...
I shouldn't say this, but your side hustle could change your life.
Amazing. Okay. I really want to delve into this with you because there's lots of questions I've got around side hustle and hustle porn and the culture that we are in right now. I actually did a post about glamorizing overworking and how we shouldn't be pursuing that side of it on social and it went viral. So this is why I was very keen to talk to you. What do you think the biggest challenge is for people when they start their own side business?
So there's so many. I think one, not really having an expectation or a vision of what you want to do in terms of where you see the side hustle going, whether you want it to be a side hustle or to be a full-time job eventually. Because I think once you know that, you understand how to actually create those boundaries and how to manage growth, maybe if you should hire. And then I think as well, time management. A lot of people don't schedule. And so what happens is you tend to use all your extra hours on your side hustle. And I remember I was talking to Steph, who founded Fuck Being Humble, because I was on her radio show last month. And we were both saying that when we didn't have schedules, every hour was for the side hustle. Every hour we would go to bed really late. There was just no structure. It was just when you get free time, you work on your side hustle. And I think that, that's the reason why side hustles has a lot of negative connotations around it. It's got this very negative feeling that, oh, it can drain you out. It's really bad. But at the same time, it could really change your life. There are loads of people who have started side hustles. And I remember when I was writing my book, I reached out to Emma Gannon actually, because I said to her, I'm writing a book, I've got a full-time job. I feel like I'm going to go crazy. And she was like, when I was writing my book, I told my line manager and I asked to take Wednesday afternoons off so I could write. And then I think along the way, she eventually left her job to focus on podcasts and stuff. But that is a healthy way to do it. You might not get the option of being able to take Wednesday afternoon off, but it's finding healthy boundaries so that you don't burn out, but you can still work on something that you really love or something or a venture that you really want to build. And I think the reason why people do overwork themselves is really about that startup culture of growing things really fast, trying to say, oh, I hit six figures, we did this, we did that. And you might not have that really big growth at the beginning if you're managing it in a sustainable way that would keep you mentally sane. It might just be steady, slow growth. And I don't think that people sometimes want that. They want to have this really crazy growth so they can go and boast about it. A lot of time it's ego as well. That's why I think side hustles kind of get that bad commentary around it, which is a shame, because I do think that it can be managed in a healthy way. And it can create so many great opportunities for you, whether it's a new job, whether it's you venturing out on your own, or just even gaining a new skill, and it doesn't really go far.
It's interesting to think of it like that. And it's probably those boundaries and those rules are probably one of the best lessons that I've ever been told as well, because, and I think I've talked about it in the podcast before, I was getting quite a lot of messages at one point from people saying, can I meet you for a coffee? Can we have a chat? Can I ask you some questions? And me being me was like, yeah. But then I was trying to figure out everything else that went around it. And it was just becoming overwhelming. And I didn't feel like I was giving anybody anything of quality because of the time that it was taking. And I think that's probably what has put me off from thinking about a side hustle before, because of that overwhelming feeling of trying to do everything all at once. The best piece of advice I got was set those rules. So it was the founder of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And she said to me, she said, you just need to say, I only meet people once a month for coffee and I'm booked up for the next 3 months, because you're controlling it rather than it control you. And I think that I'd not thought of a side hustle in that way either. I thought of it as like you start a side hustle because you're deeply unhappy in what you're doing now and you want something else to get you out of it. But that doesn't sound like it's the case at all.
Yeah. No, it's not always the case. It might just be that you have this really great idea that you think would work. And there's this element of you there's this part of you that says, if I don't try it now, I'll never be able to try it. You don't want to regret not trying something. Or it might be that you have just fallen into it because you created something and you realize that, oh, people are actually asking to buy it, even though you didn't create it for it to be bought. It could be a product or something. But I don't think it's always because you hate your job. It could also be because you want to have control of your income. And, you know, one of the things I said the other day was that with your income on your side hustle, you can actually set targets to increase that. whether it be weekly or monthly. But with your day job, the reality is that you can't set targets to increase that on a weekly or monthly basis. It has to be long-term because, you know, promotions don't come as quick. So it might just, so you might start a side hustle for financial reasons because you have a target of earning this much each month. So there's so many different reasons. I don't think it's down to hating your job. And I think even for myself, I've ran my side hustle for about 4 years. And I've always loved my corporate job, which was in communications. And I'd loved working at so many different companies. And I think that in itself has also been able to give me more experience for my side hustle. So people start for so many different reasons. But one of the other reasons as well is flexibility, being able to create the time that you work. And that's not to say that running your own business means that, you know, you have loads of free time. But depending on the type of business that you work, you can be more flexible. So that means that you might be packing orders at a different time than the daytime, as opposed to, you know, having to work a 9-to-5. It might be that you work after a 9-to-5 and during the day you can sit with your kids or do so many different things. I know that a lot of women who tend to have children want that flexibility that they don't get at work, and especially now with the pandemic as well.
I was just going to ask about that. Do you think the pandemic has changed the way that we view the way that we work and how we work? Do you think we'll see an increase in side hustles because of it?
Oh yeah, there was an increase. There was a huge increase. I can't remember the particular number, but there was a huge increase. And when I did read some research around women, it was mainly because of the flexibility, and people realized that, oh, I can actually create my own opportunities. And so people were working from different parts of the world, which has been happening for a long time anyway, but people realized that they could create their own opportunities, work from different parts of the world, work from home, whether it be selling a product or a service, and then have more time for themselves. And sometimes, again, people might not be earning as much as they were earning in their full-time job, but because they have that flexibility of the time and they're earning enough just to cover their bills and everything, that actually gives them more joy. Mm. I think people really, really appreciate time right now. And so if you can get your time back and your freedom, that means a lot to people.
Yeah, there's definitely been a shift in that and where you spend your time and how you spend your time. Like, I do not want to go back to commuting in rush hour because there's no point. It's a waste of that time. I could be using that to do something else that's more beneficial. It's interesting. It's really interesting. So you've been doing your side hustle for 5 or 6 years. What are your thoughts then on the negativity on social media that you see crop up a lot around the pressure to monetize everything we do? Have you ever felt that pressure, and what's your opinion on it? What can you actually get from a side hustle?
I'm very entrepreneurial. So when I do get an idea, I do always think about innovating, how to turn it into a business and things like that. But I never think that with hobbies that I might have, because with my hobbies, they're really just kind of bringing me joy and they're just fun. So I kind of see my hobbies very just differently. But at the same time, if someone does want to monetize a hobby because they want that to be what they do full time, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Because
that's
I think
it's a dream, right? Isn't it? If you monetize your hobby, it's something that you love to do. God, isn't that? Yeah. That is the dream.
Exactly. But for some people, because I don't think there are some hobbies that I just wouldn't want to monetize. I mean, I like doing it every now and again, but, you know, today, I mean, I think it depends. It's for some people. But so on social, I mean, it's mainly really around the fact that we shouldn't be monetizing our hobbies and they should be kept as hobbies because they're there to give us joy. They help us switch off, which is very true. But you know, there's no rule book to say that you can't and you shouldn't. So I think if you want to, feel free to do so. But just remember to have activities and things to do that can help you switch off as well. Because if you're not careful, you can find that you're working around the clock because you've taken away the activities and hobbies that help you switch off. So
And that's when those you hit burnout.
Exactly. That's when you hit burnout. Yeah. And in terms of, I know a lot of people talk about the passion as well. You can lose the passion once you start monetizing. But I think that's with all things. Even when you go into a particular role, you might find that you were really passionate about it in the beginning, but it's getting harder. There's challenges, and then it doesn't seem as passionate or fun anymore. But that's life, really. I think it's really going back to why you wanted to do the job, if you still want to do it. And if you have a side hustle, you can decide to stop. You don't have to continue it. Like, it's not something that you're tied to for life. And I think, again, it's that feeling around not looking like you're failing. That's why some people don't stop side hustles or stop their jobs or stop a particular business. It's that feeling of not wanting to look like they failed. And so we just continue to keep doing it and keep doing it. And I interviewed someone the other day, and she was telling me that she sold her business because it was just burning her out, and she was just tired of it. So she sold it and took about 6 months off. And she said she definitely felt this sense of people were going to think that she failed. But she just had to put herself first. So, yeah.
Interesting. You've definitely got me thinking differently about the, I think it's the term. I don't know if it's just because of what I've seen. And I'm all for people doing the things that make them the happiest. I think one of the big things that I've learned from doing this podcast is understanding yourself, understanding your values. And that's the thing that will make you tick, which will make you happy. And we encourage it as well at Social Chain. We do things like passion projects, and we get people to tap into those things that enable them to improve as a person and also in the role that they're doing. But I think mentally there's something in my head that makes me think it's something that I don't have a lot of time anyway. So you will find the time if it's something you really want to do, and I get that.
Yeah.
But it's like, how would I do it? And it's having a good idea as well. I don't think I've got any hobbies. Maybe that's a generation thing, or, well, that's just me. But I have very few hobbies of things that I really enjoy doing. When I was a kid, I was doing all of it. I was swimming. I was doing like all this stuff. And then as an adult, I don't think I've got many hobbies. It's just a bit sad.
But yeah, I think as adults, we do sometimes. I think it's because we lose that child side of us. That side of us that's childlike, that enjoys doing things that are not about work.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And that feeling that if you are doing something, it should be towards an end goal, maybe then.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? So your other passion point and your other area of expertise is women in business. And I want to dig into a couple of bits there, if that's all right. You've written before about the fear of looking stupid being a roadblock for a lot of women, and it really resonated with me. Would you mind talking a little bit about that idea, and is it something that you've battled with personally?
Yeah, so it might just be, I think it could be with anything, whether it's starting, whether it's having the product and service and then having to sell. It's the fear of, I think the fear of looking stupid also comes from the fear of failing. So it's really about not wanting to put yourself out there. When you start a business, you have to put yourself out there, especially when it's a small business. And so we tend to overthink what people might think. But the reality is that people are most probably not thinking anything, and you've just made it up in your head. You've really elevated yourself more than what you are in someone's mind. Someone might have a passing comment, which is true, which is fine. But I think most times it's just that fear of what if X, Y, Z thinks this and that. But then again, that's where I think we have to reframe our thoughts to what if this does really well? Because you'll never know until you do it. So whenever I'm feeling like that, I do tend to kind of rewrite the narrative. And so just reframe my thoughts and say, this could actually turn out really good. And so maybe they will think it's really perfect and it's really great what I'm doing. But most of the time when we have those negative thoughts around what people will think, it's really just our mind feeding us these lies. Like, our mind is so powerful, and it has a way of telling us things that don't exist. And I think that's important to remember, because then you know that most of the time it's not reality. It's just your fear playing on you. And I think the biggest thing that does stop people from starting something, I think, again, is the courage. It takes a lot of courage to say that I have this idea and it's going to work. Especially because, again, you have to put yourself out there and you don't want it to fail. You want it to work. But then you could reframe the failure as well, because sometimes it's not that it failed. It's just that you should most probably try it a different way, or it was just the learning point. Or it was, yeah, it's the learning point. Some people have started a business that hasn't gone well, but it's given them the opportunity to maybe get a job that they wouldn't have been able to get before if they hadn't started that business and it not doing so well. The fact that they're a self-starter could be very attractive to an employer. So I guess it's really just about reframing your experiences as well and not seeing things as failures.
Mm. It's so true, because people are terrified of getting it wrong. It's the same with feedback, terrified of getting feedback. But actually, they're the things that make us better. And if you get something out of it that then can help you get to the place that you're meant to be, then that's the joy of failing, in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's really just about changing your mindset around, or changing the narrative in your mind around that particular thing, whether it's feedback, whether it's failure, and knowing that it's not negative. There is a positive side to it. And once you begin to change your thoughts around that, you then gain the courage to just do it.
Yeah, no, that's a good tip. Really good tip. And then I want to talk to you about the company that you co-founded. Is that, are you still in that now, or is that the thing that you've left?
Oh, no, we haven't even fully launched.
Go on. Yeah, tell me about Liqueur.
So I've worked like I said, I've been in the corporate world for just about 12 years. I've worked my way up to a senior role, to director role. And I've had different experiences in the workplace. And I've seen the experience of women. And I don't think I was really aware about how women are affected at work until about 2016, to be honest, just before I started my first side hustle for Working Ladies. And I've seen women in leadership positions, but still not have power. Because, for example, I worked at a company, the man was the CEO, and there were some women in director roles. And just the difference as to how he would speak to the male employees and to the female employees, regardless of the fact that she's so senior, and how he would dictate to her what to do and things like that. And also the lack of female representation in leadership roles. I was just beginning to realize all these things along the years. And then also I started thinking about my own career and the challenges that I've had as a woman, but not just as a woman, but as a Black woman as well. And then I started to reflect on the companies that I had worked in, the fact that, oh, there are rarely any female leaders, actually. Why is that? And then I would reflect on the fact that there are companies that would have female leaders, but then they all looked the same. Mm. And the leadership wasn't reflecting society. Mm. And that's problematic, especially for the younger generation who are coming into work. Because when you don't see yourself somewhere, it's very hard to aspire to go for a leadership role in that company, or to just grow your career in that company or in that industry. And one of the industries that's not very diverse is the creative and advertising industry. So it can be quite challenging.
Why do you think that is? Because this is something we've been looking at, looking at the volume of applicants we've been getting and trying to really understand it. Like I said before, that data piece. Why do you think it is that our industry is so, just has a lack of diversity in it?
So one of the things that I found out through some research was that there are people from some minority backgrounds that aren't aware of the path into career, into advertising and marketing. And I think when you look at adverts weren't as diverse as they are now. Mm. And so you would never think that you would have the opportunity to create an ad, right? if you don't see yourself in them, or you could even appear in an ad. So I think it's the not knowing the knowledge of how to actually get into the industry, and then also not seeing yourself there. So not even thinking that it is possible.
Yeah.
So now I know that people are sending, kind of working in partnership with platforms that work with minority groups or underrepresented groups, to partner with them and let them know that this is a career path that you can do. So they're bringing them in through apprenticeships, and into schools as well, going into schools and colleges and kind of talking about the industry and the opportunities that there are as well.
It's so tricky to know that this is even a job when you're like in school anyway. So I think we do have a bigger job to do in terms of just letting the wider world know that this is something that you can go and do. But I don't think it's the first point of call for anybody when they go into this industry anyway. But it is interesting. I think what we've got at Social Chain now is that we've got a great mixture of people because a lot of the time when you look at these grad jobs, they are grad jobs. They're jobs for people that have left university, which is alienating such a big group of people, especially now more so than ever because of the price to go to university. We pride ourselves on having 50% of people who've never worked in this industry, who just know social media so much better. And I was really excited in the last week to read about TikTok doing TikTok resumes. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I saw that.
They've launched it in the US where they're basically going to try and take on LinkedIn from a job perspective. And I just thought that is brilliant, like, because that's what we need. We need people who know the platforms and know how to create content that reaches audiences in the right way. So yeah, I'm hoping that there's more movement in that as well, just expanding how you look for jobs and where you can find them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That was very, very innovative of them, actually. I think I came across it a few weeks ago. I'm still wondering how it's going to work, but
I don't know.
Hopefully companies will be open to it. It's definitely a new way, and hopefully people will be open to that kind of change.
Yeah.
Yeah, looks very interesting.
I'm waiting because it is just in the US at the moment as we speak. And I got in touch with TikTok straight away. I was like, I want on this. How do I get on it? I want to get as many young people into the business as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, so that business, which is called Lecour, LEICOUR. It came about really from my experience and my co-founder's experience. So she coaches women in leadership roles, or women who want to go into leadership roles. I think what I also see is that people have access to coaching and all the development stuff once they get into the role, as opposed to before the role, which kind of seems a little backwards. Mm. But so we actually plan to work with women who are in the mid level. So they're not actually in a leadership role yet, supporting them, preparing them, getting them equipped, helping them understand how to navigate things such as like how to navigate relationships with seniors, negotiation, not just around money, but like in the workplace as well. And things around how to sit on a board. So we have all really practical stuff as well. But in terms of our offering at the moment, it's just workshops that we're doing, but we're actually working on a tech platform that could help women accelerate their careers. And one of the reasons why I think it's so important is that during the pandemic, we saw that it was women's leadership that really, really actually helped some countries move forward during the pandemic. And I think it was a lot of the soft skills that tend to get played down, like empathy, that women do bring to the table. So I think it's very important to have that diversity in leadership and just have a different lens, really, on how to lead a business and grow a business. We can't continue to, you know, to have things operate through one lens. I mean, sometimes I think that people just, the default is men sometimes, and that shouldn't be the case. And sometimes the default is maybe being white as well. And that shouldn't be the case. Like, leadership should reflect what society looks like. And we do have a focus on women, but we're also having a focus on 50% of the women that come onto our program, making sure that they're from different backgrounds. Because we do know that from the research that there are barely any black or brown women in leadership roles. And that's important, again, for representation for the generations who are coming in, even for someone like myself. I remember when I was applying for roles, it was, you know, it motivated me when I saw a black woman in the leadership team. I didn't know that until I reflected, but it did motivate me to apply because I thought, oh, if she can be in the leadership team, then, you know, there's some opportunity for me to grow in my role, someone who I can look up to. And I think we really, really, we don't value the fact that when we see people that look like us, it does give us that encouragement inside. So yeah, that's part of the reason we've set up Le Corps. We're planning to launch very, very early in 2022. At the moment, we're trying to write a research paper around women in leadership. But again, it's more focused on the emerging leaders. So I mentor quite a few young girls and they just can't see themselves growing into in their career, becoming a senior manager, going into a leadership role. It just seems like it's just not possible. And some people, like, I've always been really ambitious. So regardless, at some points of my life when I haven't seen people like me, it was just like, yeah, I don't care. That's what I want. That's what I'm going to go for. But not everyone is like that. And I can see that through some of the young women that I've mentored. So it's really kind of helping them navigate that space and giving them the tools and resources.
It's very interesting. It's one of the reasons I started the podcast was because I am a believer in you can't be what you can't see. And yeah, when I got the role of MD at Social Chain only 6 months after joining, and I didn't join with the ambition to take that. Like, that wasn't even in my, it wasn't anywhere near, like nowhere near in my mind. And I got it. I applied for it, interviewed, because I'm ambitious and I won't turn down a challenge. But it was never something that I thought, right, this is what I'm going to be. I'm going to be MD of Social Chain when I joined. And I spent a hell of a lot of time really struggling with the fact that they'd given it me. And I couldn't really figure out why. And then there was a couple of things, like just not being knowledgeable enough in the space when I started, and the reason that I joined was to learn. But the other thing that I did is I looked on Google Images, because I saw a therapist and she was like, what comes to your mind when you think of the word managing director? And I was like, old man, grey suit. And she was like, well, what characteristics have they got? I said, they're just sat in a corner in an office and they don't talk to anyone and they just focus on strategy and numbers. And she's like, yeah, that's not you, is it? I said, no, it's not me. And then I Google imaged it, and the pictures that come up on Google Images are exactly that. So it's interesting because I talk about it in terms of imposter syndrome, but I actually saw a post yesterday that was like, it's not imposter syndrome. It's the fact that we've just been told so often by society that that's the way it is, that that's what we think. And the first image of a female managing director on that Google Images when I did it was a Getty image. It wasn't even a real image.
Oh my God, that's terrible. And that also shows the importance that the media plays as well, and platforms like Google. It's so, so important, the role that they play in creating perceptions of what leaders look like. And when I started for Working Ladies, actually, that was one of the reasons as well, because I was writing for a career platform, and they were particularly just interviewing women in fashion and PR, the glossy type career. Mm-hmm. And it was one particular type of woman that they were interviewing. And so I said to them, you know, there are so many different careers we could look at, whether it be tech, and there's so many different types of women that we could showcase. I just think that we need to really reflect society. And I remember they just decided one day to talk about Beyonce's career. And I was like, because they would talk about everyday women in fashion PR, and then they went to the extreme to talk about Beyonce, just because I said, talk about, you know, diversify it. And I was just like, are you telling me that you can't find an everyday black woman that you could approach, talk about her career? So you've gone to the extreme to talk about Beyonce. Anyways, after that, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to start my own platform, because I know how powerful media is. And when Full Working Lady started, it's changed now. It was a content-based website. So it's kind of like, it was a media platform. So we had loads of articles and interviews that you could read. And I wanted to help create a perception of what you could achieve. Mm. And it's so important showcasing different types of people, because it creates a perception in your mind that there are different types of people in this role, and it's for everyone. It's not just for this particular person. There's a new media company called Stack World, and I love what they're doing. It's by Sharmadine Reed, and she's really also trying to use the media for good. It's focused, it's a platform mainly for women, and talks a lot around women and the economy and entrepreneurship and politics and things like that. But I love how she's also using the media to change the narrative, tell stories, change perceptions, because media is just so powerful in creating perceptions of what leaders look like. And I think that's another reason why people don't start a business, mainly women, because when you think about entrepreneurship and you think about what a founder or a business owner looks like, we tend to think about what the media talks about, which is a bunch of men. And then we see the special series for female founders, because it still hasn't become the norm. It's all really interesting. But when I do see women in leadership roles, like MDs and CEOs, I am really glad to see that. I can't imagine the imposter syndrome that they must face, especially if they have a team of 10 men underneath them that they have to manage. It's always very interesting, and it just makes me happy to see.
Yeah, it's a challenge, but it's one I'm happy to face. And it sounds like you started your side hustle in the right way to try and solve problems, to help people come out of that from your experience and from what you've seen. And it's just incredible. So I just want to say a massive thank you. One, for changing my thinking on side hustles, but also for starting such an important side hustle that will hopefully have such an impact on future generations.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And thank you for joining me today. It's been so lovely to talk to you. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you. The first part of the book is writing it, and the second job is to market it. So that's what I'm doing a lot of time. I'm spending a lot of time really just talking about it and the benefits of it, and just pushing it out further into the world.
Brilliant. Well, everyone listening, go buy it, get your side hustle on, and then let us know how you get on. But thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
It has been fantastic to speak to Elizabeth today, and I'm so grateful to her for coming on and sharing her wisdom around writing a book, the joys, the pitfalls, and then also just everything around the way she talked about the benefits of a side hustle, how to get the most out of it, why people might start a side hustle, and also how we all need to be more mindful about you can't be what you can't see, and the joys you get from speaking up when you're in those positions. I will be back with another solo episode next week.